back there.
Yeah, last night you talked about three factors that occurred organization. Number one, the splitting of the organization between the pragmatists and the ideological pure. The growing apathy of the base because we won, and the reaction of those folks who've just had some of their prerogatives and wealth taken from them. And I wondered if you've thought of any kinds of strategies or tactics that can be used to address those issues, and if you thought deeper about what the psychological aspects that are operational in those factors.
Why don't you elaborate on the last comment you made?
Me?
Yeah, please. Deeper about the psychological.
The psychological factors in terms of why is there a growing apathy in the base after victory, what it is that basically fuels the separation between the Stalinists and the Trotskys, you know, who want to go in different divergent directions, and if you've had any ideas about how you go about addressing those issues to try to re-strengthen and revitalize the organizations to continue the fight.
Yeah, I think what happens is it's not a. I'm not talking about a differences on the far left. I don't know what you mean by Stalinists and Trotskyists. I think what ordinarily would happen is you go through a long confrontation, and the people that you see as the establishment sort of divide into those who want to resolve it with you by passing the Wagner Act, or by passing the Civil Rights Voting Act, or by establishing a university committee on sweatshops and procurement so that there's not as many demonstrators occupying the administration building in any given cycle. And they set up some modus operandi to deal with the issues you've raised. They give you substantial reform on those issues, and that attracts people who are more inclined to be pragmatic, maybe even opportunistic, but certainly pragmatic. Other people will see that as a sellout or betrayal, or they have become so radicalized by the process that they think the whole system has to go, the whole empire has to go. It's not enough to end the Vietnam War, people used to say in the 60s. We have to end seven wars from now. If they were around, I would ask, well, how's that project going? So I have this feeling that this is inevitable, that it's based on divergent types of people. And I would say that I'm on the side of reform, first and foremost, if it's not token. And I would define it as, is the reform concrete? Does it deliver benefits to people who have not received those benefits before? Secondly, does it empower people who have had no power or less power? And third, does it open the institutions in any way to their voices, or are they still marginalized? And fourth, does it put new legal or regulatory tools in their hands, which they have not had before? And fifth, I've grown to think is more important, does it establish a new cultural norm that people start to abide by? You know, like not calling each other by vicious epithets, or one of my favorite simple examples, people not being able to smoke and going along with it. Suddenly airplanes are smoke-free, if you remember the old days. So that's a norm. On the other hand, I'm also very interested in a social revolution, and I agree with the idea that if you get out of Afghanistan, it's not enough because there'll be another stand to get into if something fundamental doesn't change, because I've seen enough of it over and over. The problem with revolution in my mind is I've spent 50 years trying to define it, and I don't know exactly what it is. There's a very fine line between reform, radical reform, and revolution. And it won't do to say revolution is getting rid of everything, or revolution is the replacement of one power structure altogether, because I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that. In Venezuela, there's been a revolution. I've been in Venezuela 3 times. There's been a change of government. Yes, absolutely. There are revolutionary projects that are anti-capitalist. Yeah, absolutely. But about 45% of the country is against the revolution. And maybe that's why the dictatorship of the proletariat was once proposed, to eliminate all those 45%. But that won't do, that won't happen. So the thing that slows revolution down and makes it more of a radical reform is the scale of the opposition. There's, to me, no getting around that fact, unless you mean a cultural, social, on the level of values and norms, a complete revolution of the kind spoken about last night, about cooperative ethics instead of competitive ethics, reverence for the earth instead of just reverence for the human, equalization of respect, the end of demonization and scapegoating. I put those in the category of what King described, Dr. King described as a revolution of values. And a revolution of values will bend and alter the institutions in time, but it will be gradual. It won't be an instant process. In fact, we're in this very process, and we don't see it because we're impatient and frustrated. So that's all I can say. I do think it's inevitable that these splits occur, and maybe I haven't described them accurately, but they occur both in the establishment and in the movement, over and over. It ends up with Lyndon Johnson saying, "We shall overcome." And that's the way it is, at least from my experience.
That's a happy note. Yes,
that's a positive view, isn't it? half empty, half full, up to you.
I'd like to go back to the relationship of the leaders, with political leaders, and the social movement. I've been interested or concerned that there are so many left movements or groups and etc., but they don't always get together to make it.
That's an understatement.
But what is it? Yeah, and you talked about that the idealism and the movement of the 60s was decapitated when the leaders, the political leaders, were gone. And yet you talked about participatory democracy, all the decisions, and it's local, and et cetera. What is the relationship? Are we suffering at this time, as why these various left movements can't at least cooperate on certain things to get something done, because of the lack of leadership? Or is our movement not strong enough to throw up leadership? What is happening?
I think a lot of reading and study and discussion would be useful in taking some examples and draw your own conclusions. What was the relationship between the slaves, the abolitionist movement, the Radical Republican Party, and Lincoln? Another would be the relationship between the radicals and organizers, the old labor movement, the CIO, the Farmer Labor Alliance, et cetera, and Roosevelt. Another, although it was stillborn, would be the relationship between the civil rights and peace. Before I leave, if I may. Number one, if you think about it, do you think that it began more or less outside the institutional process?
That's a complicated one. Yeah. Somebody else answered.
I mean, it didn't begin with the AFL-CIO, or it began with... It began with the Scott Walker proposal, right?
Yes.
But it began with TAA. It began with TAA, so a student union organization was the first group who went down to the Capitol bringing Walker Valentine's.
Graduate assistance.
Right.
And
high school
so
students.
I thought it began with a protest at the governor's mansion after someone looked at the...
Who else has a creation story for me? I'm talking about who was the first sign of we're not going for this. Where did that come from?
Yeah. I think the bill came out on the Friday before February 14th. And over the weekend, people started to see what was in there. The graduate assistants, the TAA, already had this. In my opinion, a kind of a wimpy thing about, you know, they were trying to protest the governor and they had this Valentine's Day strategy that they had cooked up long before they really knew what details.
So that was previous, yeah.
So the thing was already in the queue, and that came out they did that on Valentine's Day, which was Monday. And then...
That day, students in Stoughton through Facebook.
Right.
Organize themselves.
Right. They came out, students from Stoughton, and then also at Madison Teachers Incorporated and Madison Schools emptied out also. And so within a few days, it was all this crescendo of activism culminating at the Capitol. Now, the AFL-CIO and various unions were part of it, but they were not at the front of the parade.
Right.
They were in a supporting role.
But they got into it.
And so that's how it came out. And then when the senators left the state, then everybody had a chance to hold the fort. And that was holding the Capitol and seizing the Capitol. And I give the Graduate Students Association, the TAA, a lot of credit because I did think they gave a lot of leadership to keeping it clean and peaceful and organized. They were very energetic, you know, with their youthful vigor, but they also had discipline and organization.
But prior to these little beginnings of an eruption, it took what I usually call a combination of a moral insult and a concrete grievance. Right, and that came from the governor, right?
Yeah, I just wanted to...
And that was... Why do you think it was a moral injury?
An assault on working their own state workers.
It was an assault on something that had been achieved in past generations and was part of a shared value. Everyday consensus, everyday life consensus. And so that's the counter movement trying to take back, trying to find. The counter movement thought because of the surface of apathy, it was time to make a move. And pick your pockets or, you know, get you when you were asleep. So maybe the movement required the provocation
to
come to existence.
And there was a lot more in
there. Yes, yes, you had your hand up. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of going around a question that I had for you, which is the students were a huge part of the start of this movement. I live 5 blocks from the Capitol, so I've been on the Capitol ever since, and they've kind of disappeared, so I'd like your opinion. But I just wanted to tell you the provocation that I think hit a lot of people is with Walker's announcement that previous Friday he announced that he would call out the National Guard.
Oh yes.
And I've never been a public employee or a member of a union, and I was there the first day with a sign that said "Member Union of Human Beings, I stand with you," because I just believed there was just that thing you described. It was like something. I've never been a protester. I've never carried a sign. it was like that dignity thing that you're in human
right.
nature that you're describing.
The dignity
it's just
thing.
Like push a button. And I just
right.
like to
exactly.
say that I think that's why 10,000 people came out immediately at the noon hour and at 5 o'clock that whole first week. You know, it's just an amazing, just like a button.
That's not the way we do things in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's not the way we do things.
That's it. That's right. Yeah. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Happened. Yes, over there.
I think also there was this thing, we're all about jobs, and that was how they got elected, whether or not that's true. But it was all about getting jobs, stimulating the economy, and one of the first things they did was give tax breaks to millionaires, and then assault public workers and teachers. And demonize them as the cause of the economy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people just, they just said, that's not true. They knew it wasn't true. And I think the assault to dignity of the shared empathy with public workers was huge. I mean, these were people that teach our children, that clean our streets, that... yeah, exactly. And here they were being demonized. And
why
somehow...
why did they elect Scott Walker in the first place, then?
I was with Obama, but somebody else, you had it, your hand up back there.
Well,
yes, yes, I'm sorry, in the red.
There's three of you going back.
Yes.
Yeah, I was in Florida soaking up rum and sunshine at the time all this happened, but... the first thing I saw on the news was the governor's going to call out the National Guard if. So he was conscious of a sin that he was going to commit against the Wisconsin political body. And I think that's what caused us to say, we've got to get back to Wisconsin right now and join in this thing. And one day later, the crowd started forming, just as she said.
Yes, back there. You next.
Oh,
you.
I was just going to say that there was this preliminary shot of turning down the train.
Of what?
A lot of people organized about that.
The money for the train, STEM funds.
Bad things are coming, and what's this guy going to do next? People couldn't believe he did that. And obviously it wasn't going to, you know, get 10,000 people down to the Capitol, but everybody was saying, I wonder what's going to happen now.
That's very true. Now way back there.
Okay, I want to say that he was like a Trojan horse. Because when he campaigned, he never talked about attacking collective bargaining or trying to end unions. Because people would not have elected him. But he talked about jobs and building economy. And so even the people who didn't vote for him thought, oh, maybe. Mm-hmm. But it was a lie. That's right. Really, I think.
Yeah, he lied.
First father. He lied.
When he campaigned, he lied.
Yeah, I think it's common sense now, at least around the more progressive parts of the Democratic Party, that mobilization for Obama was huge in 2008, and that a very large number of Republicans hated Bush, didn't care for Bush's successor, purported successor, and therefore did not vote. Genetic Republicans, whose grandparents were Republicans, did not vote. Come 2010, disillusionment with Obama on the part of the progressive base, huge, enormous, something we can't discount. And those genetic Republicans came back to the polls, and it was just enough. But to discount the disillusionment with Obama in terms of mobilizing people would be a very great error. Yes?
Well, I also think outside money in Wisconsin's election and the Republican agenda, which we've seen in other states, to move forward against unions, and there's an agenda that's being bought and paid for
against the
right.
Yeah.
Yes, you.
Another factor in why he got elected, I think, not only the Trojan horse thing, if he didn't mention the collective bargaining, but there was a successful, I think, divide and conquer strategy where he separated out law enforcement and firefighters, that they were not going to be affected by the cut. Really, it's a cut in the total compensation, but he describes it as, you know, you're going to pay more towards your pension and your insurance. Well, law enforcement and firefighters tend to vote conservative, and actually, my husband works, and he's not a state patrol officer, but he works for the state patrol, and those people all voted for the guy. Now, as soon as it came out that the collective bargaining piece was in there, then law enforcement and the firefighters all came out to protest. But they were they had a part in electing him in the first place because it was a very successful
and
sort
then
of
he
divide.
Accepted them.
Way, way back there in the back.
Yeah, just getting back to your original question, I would formulate it that the basic violation is it was he basically announced you only get to participate as citizens on election day.
Yeah,
we've right. got 4 years to do whatever the hell we want.
Yeah,
right.
Yes.
And you don't get to object.
Absolutely.
I think the union showed up very late because he spoke to two Milwaukee business groups in December and announced the whole scheme, and I heard no reaction from them. And then we had our betrayal in the legislature about finalizing collective bargaining agreements that were ready to be put in place for the next couple of years.
But those liberals and progressives who believed, I count myself among them, the Democrats would never stand up to anything since the runaway factories and so forth have been cooperatively organized by Republicans and Democrats for 30 years, were pretty surprised when those 14 Democrats left the state. And suddenly the Democratic Party, or part of it, was back in the middle of all these protests, which is something that has not been in our era.
Yeah,
it's something that comes out
Obama.
Of a different era.
Obama promised to come back and put on comfortable shoes and defend us.
Right.
Where was the National Democratic Party? Nowhere.
They would have heard us.
I mean, nowhere. He didn't come out. I mean, wasn't the vice president supposed to come out and wasn't he put on a kibosh? The White House supposedly put a kibosh on the vice president coming out here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big show. Yeah. I think I really have total disillusionment with the Democratic Party. I think we should have had a general strike.
Yes.
That, I mean, come on. I mean, a NAFTA was a Democratic Clinton agenda. They sold out a long time ago.
Right.
You have someone back there.
How do you account for the walkout by the politicians?
Yeah.
A power move. They want power. That's the only thing that drives them.
Well, it was an unusual power move.
Sure, it was an unusual power move, but where was Obama? If they really wanted to fight him, where was Obama?
There's this tendency to go to the negative. I just asked a simple question. How do you account for the politicians walking out?
Well, they're fighting for their jobs.
Okay, no, but you said that you were against the whole Democratic Party.
I said I was disillusioned with the Democratic Party.
Right. But here were these politicians who walked out. So it either means there's something about the Democratic Party where there's more than one faction,
right.
Or something about the force of your own movement that affected these politicians and changed their behavior from conventional behavior to extremely unconventional for politicians. I thought it was...
And that was important. That was important. Way back there. You had your hand up for a while.
Yeah, I'm originally from around Wichita, Kansas, and that's where the Koch brothers came from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Money talks, remember that. Mm-hmm. Koch brothers got Walker. Yeah.
Okay.
All of their money.
Yeah. I think there's a few hands I haven't seen at all.
Way back there.
You. Yeah.
I'm an organizer, and I'm trying to tease out of this what might be a good organizing tool. And I think I'm hearing that a kind of righteous indignation is what sparked a lot of people to participate in the movement. And I'm trying to figure out if that is a sort of consensus in the room, how we can use that as an organizing tool for the larger movement that the Wisconsin movement was held.
Many people turned signs and said shame. Now, how far you can go with that is a different question. But it was an immediate impulse. And for those of you who weren't here or didn't watch a lot of YouTube, one of the most startling things about the months and months of demonstrations was that every single week people would have more new handmade signs that were really funny and really insightful. Nobody has explained whether this is the generation that watches Comedy Central at night or there's some other reason, but the creative contribution artistically and in terms of humor is something I have never seen before in any mass political movement, and that's something we need to learn from.
And the signs of penance. I'm sorry I voted for him.
Yeah, that's right, penance. Yes.
I think I lived in Madison for 30 years. I live in Olympia, Washington now. But the last 10 years that I lived in Madison, I organized in northern Wisconsin against a multinational mining company. many of them, all of them, all of the world's biggest mining companies, and we won. We fought and we stopped them. And I think that we can focus on Madison until we're forever. But what really impressed me and touched me were the people that were coming down to Madison to protest from all over the But to me, there wasn't an epicenter for this. It was the whole state, because then they were holding rallies in their own local areas, and that says a lot for Wisconsin.
Right,
I don't care so much about Madison, because it's easy to do it in Madison.
Yeah.
Because you know that at least probably one or two of your coworkers will be there, or neighbors down the street. You know, but in northern Wisconsin, and in central Wisconsin, my cousin works for Marquette County Roads, and he's a snow plower. But he was probably voting Republican sometime in our lifetime. But he was a union member, and he came down to the protest, something that man would have never fathomed doing.
That's right.
So it talks to what Tom was saying earlier about when something is taken away or threatened, you know, that's when people are coming out.
Yeah, I don't think this has been a discussion based on Madison. I think everybody assumes that it was the whole state. Do we have to end? Or
let's go on for 10 more minutes.
Okay, fine. Sorry. Is it okay, everybody?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
There's two of you. Go ahead. Yes, lady there, and then this gentleman.
Well, I'm from the great liberal state of Arizona.
That's Joe Goldberg.
I listened to what happened in what is happening in Madison. It was a big aha moment of sort of the stars sort of being aligned that is telling more and more people in this country where we're headed unless we get involved and say the direction we're going. We've got to turn it, because it's about us now. I think for a long time, the more liberal, progressive voice has been really a part of the silent majority. And we have decided that is not working for us. It is not working for everyday people, poor people, disabled people, the middle class. And we've got to speak up. So I celebrated what was happening here. Not because it was a good thing, the governor took his stance, but I think it was an opportunity for an awakening of us and to become more involved and say, this is not the country we want. This is not the way we want to deal with issues concerning unemployment, the wars, because we've got to stop these wars. I don't know how. But we've got to stop it. It is not working for the people in the Middle East. It is not working for them, for us to be their bombing and all of that kind of thing. So, I almost think what is happening is a good thing, because it is a call to action for us.
My wife and I are from Minnesota, and of course we're watching everything that's going on here. But this is way bigger than Wisconsin. This isn't just about Wisconsin. This is, you know, I've been to several conferences. I was at Netroots Nation a few months ago when the Van Jones thing went on, and it was inspiring. And part of my take is that, you know, what all of these things are being attacked, and people, or little groups, are running around putting their fingers in the dike for, you know, voter rights and for rights for unemployed people and rights for everything else. But what is being attacked is the dike. The dike is democracy. That's the thing that puts us all together in the same boat. And somehow we have to find a way. That's how we get all the voices together. I mean, it reminds me, I wrote an article, a letter to the editor recently, and I said that we have to remember the sort of lesson, Horton Hears a Who. And that is, a person's a person, no matter how small. And that what we all have to do is we have to get together, and we have to continue to use our voices in unison to say, we are here, we are here, we are here, we are here, until it's so loud that they can't ignore us anymore. And that's what we have to do. We have to say in a very loud voice, in a unified voice, we have to find, we have to shout loud enough to shout out the millionaires with megaphones.
And so somebody else who hasn't asked a question or made a comment, yeah. Way back there, yes.
Yeah, I'm from Missouri, but I was raised in Wisconsin near Ottawa. And what got me was the speed with which all this foul legislation was being proposed. And it was clear that our legislators, or the Wisconsin's legislators, weren't thinking for themselves. Nobody can think that fast for themselves. It was this proposed stuff from the ALEC group, and it's so easy. I mean, they were so clearly, I mean, it, just grab a damn book or a binder and let's throw some legislation, see how fast it can go through. And that's not the way Wisconsin works, or any state as far as I know. It was shocking. So it was, again, and so I came up from Missouri, long drive for me just to carry signs around the Capitol. And it, I mean, it was just stunning and appalling what was happening. And I knew it was happening there and in many other places. And they're not going to stop. That was just the first couple of months. They've got until they get out of there.
Here's another point that, that those who weren't here might not have observed. On the night of the recalls a few Tuesdays ago, one of the interviews in the Ed Show was with the woman who was teacher and recently married to a policeman. And so I guess Ed said, and what happened when the mob came toward you? And he said, they came toward me with smiles and handshake, and we surrendered immediately. So who's going to say that it would happen everywhere? Certainly not. But the fact that the police defected, including police officials, was a stunning development in Wisconsin. And the firefighters perhaps led to the police action, inaction, whatever you want to call it. And this, too, may mark a turning point of some kind. At least it's new and different and certainly unexpected.
I know I've spoken before, but I wanted to answer your one question and say something that might be really unexpected to all of you, and that is those protests that came out of outrage of the foul things you're talking about were incredibly joyful. They were addicting. And the oneness that you felt, like we are all good people, we're all together, is like the best experience of my life.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's the thing. Right. And I wanted to invite you all, if you're free at noon today, to come to the Rotunda, because what I've done to keep going is every day I sing in the Capitol Rotunda with this group of people that's grown from several to several hundred.
The longest labor sing-along.
And I mean, it's super fun. I mean, I go because I love it. It's so fun.
I'll be there.
Good. You don't have to know how to sing.
Let's go another 5 minutes.
It is fun.
My philosophy is that anyone who earns over $1 million a year should vote Republican, but anybody else should not. People who are voting Republican have been duped, have been convinced that government is evil, and if they vote Republican, there won't be as much government, but that's not true. What the Republicans do, it's welfare for the rich and not for the poor. So those people who are voting Republican, like they did in our recall election, after all this hoorah, and we only took back 2 seats from the Republicans out of 6, I mean, those people are just, I'm sorry, stupid.
Talking about my evangelical relative.
I am generally a completely nonviolent person. However, I don't understand why all of the assassinations that we've endured over the years have been of good people. Now, think of the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision that said corporations are people and they can contribute whatever they want to elect whoever they want, giving it, we're a plutocracy, the corporations run the country. Why can't we have, why doesn't someone come out of the shadows and assassinate some of those Supreme Court justices?
No.
I never.
On that frightening note.
there and still bury people in the audience. Tom, anybody who wants to help plan this, I guess, expert will be here. Please stay in the room. Everybody else, you need to grab Tom for a little while.
First of all, I want to thank you for staying and sharing your experience. It's obvious when the subject of Wisconsin comes up, everybody has something to say, and everybody is still very energized. I'm so glad that I finally got here to hear a little bit. I'll come over to the rotunda.
And he's coming next spring.
But the experience that you've been through, I have to say from afar, is holy.
You need to find out holy what?
It's a holy experience. It's very hard to describe if you are not a religious person, and I'm not particularly, but again and again, I have been blessed to be in these moments. And I would call them the moments of transformative social movements arising. Where they go is another matter we've discussed, but it's so fortunate, don't you think, that anybody who's had this chance to live through this kind of experience will hold on to it, especially including those high school kids,
right?
You know, for life. And that's what I meant by the transformation and the creation of norms that are only brought about in these unexpected ways of sudden rebellion by people who the day before never thought that they would do anything like this. Right? It's kind of amazing. And so I hope you hold on to it, and I hope you understand that you've made a huge contribution to this country's betterment, and whatever happens in Wisconsin, we can all feel the vibration of change that you have created. It's an energy change. It's a moral change, and it laps up against the decrepit institutions. But it's a true change, and I think it gets harder. It gets more complicated. But I hope that you'll treasure the change that you've experienced. I do.